Hello and welcome to an episode of Everything is Canon, a Cinelinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at Everything Canon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Raquel Vasquez Gilliland all about her brand new book, How Moon Fuentes Fell in Love with the Universe, which is described as the Hating Game meets I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter in this irresistible romance starring a Mexican-American teen who discovers love and profound truths about the universe when she spends her summer on a road trip across the country. Drawing heavily from her own Mexican-American heritage and family, Raquel explores issues that will certainly feel universal. Self-image, sex positivity, identity, it's all there and it's wonderful. Using a mixed-media approach and a bit of magic, How Moon Fuentes Fell in Love with the Universe is perfect for today's social media frenzied world and for those looking to take a step back and find some self-love and maybe some other kinds of love too. We talk about her love of both poetry and prose, how this book started out as a robot and cyborg traveling circus story set in historic Mexico, I know, the importance of Latinx Hispanic representation in YA romance, the book of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read it. Hi everyone, welcome to the show. As always around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, now that we can do that again in most places, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. And this should be done all year long. And as a reminder, August is Black Business Month, so get out there and support Black-owned businesses. I'm partial to independent bookstores myself, so if you can, seek out any Black-owned independent bookstores close to you or online and give them some of your money. Okay, Raquel Vasquez Gilliland is a Mexican-American poet, novelist, and painter. She was born and raised in West Palm Beach, Florida, where she earned a BA in cultural anthropology from the University of West Florida. She would go on to receive her MFA in poetry from the University of Alaska. I want to talk to her about that. Did you mention something about that school, that program's closing or something? Did I read that?
Oh, you know, at the time of writing Moon Fuentes, there was discussion of the program being cut. Okay. And I was contacted to encourage the people to not do that. So that's what I did. And I actually have not checked in with them in a while, but they are doing the residency right now even. So okay. I hope that it's still going. Okay. I haven't gotten confirmation.
All right, perfect. I just wanted to that, as I read that, I remember you saying something, so I wanted to ask you. All right, back to the intro. She's most inspired by fog and seeds and the lineages of all things. When not writing, Raquel tells stories to her plants and they tell her stories back. She now lives in Tennessee with her beloved family and mountains. She's released two poetry collections, Dirty and Honey and Tales from the House of Vasquez, both released in 2018, and her debut YA novel, Cia Martinez and the Moonlit Beginning of Everything came out last year. She's here today to talk about her new book, How Moon Fuentes Fell in Love with the Universe, which is described as the hating game meets I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter in this irresistible romance starring a Mexican-American teen who discovers love and profound truths about the universe when she spends her summer on a road trip across the country. Please welcome to the show Raquel Vasquez Gilliland. Hi, Raquel.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me. Of course. I'm so happy to be here.
it's funny because we always have to pretend we weren't just talking for minutes.
But, I think I sound a little calmer. So.
Okay. You just went into author mode, right? This book's, you know, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be the week of the release anyway. So that means you'll have two officially published works of poetry and then two YA novels. Could you pick, do you think, if you had to, poetry or prose? Like what do you, or are they both even for you? Like what, do you have one maybe you love a little bit more?
Okay. When I presented my thesis to like my MFA people, my colleagues and my mentors who I'd been studying poetry with and studying poetry under, I announced, look, I'm really sorry, but I have to admit that prose or fiction is my first love. Mm. So, and then I went into the thesis and they passed me anyway. So I would say that fiction is my first love. That's still true. But there's something about poetry. It just, I don't know. I was actually, I picked up one of my favorite collections yesterday, and it's called The Book of Medicines by Linda Hogan. And I spent some time reading it, and I just took a walk in my house, and the light coming in through the windows just seemed so much more vivid. Mm. And to me, poetry is sort of like touching a dream or something really surreal, but somehow it makes the real world more heightened. Mm. So there's love for both, even though fiction was first.
And there's and there's plenty of room for both, for sure. I admittedly don't read a ton of poetry, but you know, like the way you just described it, like gave me goosebumps. It's like, it sounds wonderful when you, you know, the way you describe it, clearly you have a fondness for it. Mm. I actually just read, I'll be talking to this person this week, actually. I don't know, Amber McBride is releasing a book called Me Moth, and it's actually a novel in verse. Mm. It's really, really fucking good. And yeah, definitely take a note of it. Yeah, Amber McBride wrote it. It's called Me Moth. And,
okay.
and she's
writing it down.
Yeah, because she's a poet. She's a huge, she's released a ton of poetry. And this is her debut YA novel. And she's doing it in verse. And like, it had me in tears. It is so good. Mm-hmm. Anyways, definitely check that out. We were just sort of talking about, again, off air, about sort of, like I told you, I'm such a huge, first of all, I'm a no bullshit person. So I just want to say that, you know, I wrote something on Twitter when I read this book, and I read it in one day. I couldn't put it down anyways, but it was a funny thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a funny thing because it took me a bit to get into it. And I was just like reading it, and I'm just like, I don't know if this is for me. And I'm reading it, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm still not sure. And I'm reading it, and I'm reading it. And then like, and I'm like, okay, this is good. Okay. This is okay. I'm sorry. Next thing you know, I was done and I loved it. It was such a weird mm-hmm. thing for me. It's like, it just gets, and I think I said something on Twitter about how it gets better and better and better each chapter. And the third act, I love the third act big time. I think the thing was early on too, it's just like, oh, I don't know if I can hear how good looking Santiago is again.
Right.
And it was just like, it's like, oh my God, it's written so well. After a while, I'm just like, you know what? Santiago is really good looking. And then it's just like, next thing you know, I'm like, when's Santiago coming back on the page? It's just like, it's just really, really cool thing that happens when you're reading this book. And I encourage people, like, I don't think people are going to have a hard time putting this book down. I'm just talking about my experience, but it was just such a weird thing. And it's like one of those things where like, I have a hard like DNF rule. Like I will never not finish a book unless it's offensive in some way. Right. Like unless it's about mm-hmm. racism or Nazis or something, but I would know that going into it anyways, but I'll always finish a book no matter what. But it just slowly like, and I think it's reflective of the, not only of just the great writing, but the subject matter, I think. And we'll speak to a bit about that. But anyways, by the end, I was just like, well, before the end, I was just like, I was into it big time. So one of the things that you wrote in this book, in your author's notes, is that it didn't start out this way. And I have to say, I really want to read a book about a robot and a cyborg traveling circus set in historic Mexico. Like, give me that book too. Like, I want both. Talk to me a bit about how that book turned into this book.
Sure. Okay. So I have wanted to write a robot book since 2012. Mm-hmm. And I have attempted it many, many times. I have this basic plot in my head. And after I turned in my last edits for Cia Martinez, like I got a two book deal, so I kind of realized I had to start working on my next book. And I was like, okay, robot book, it's time. So I did a little outline, and I started it doing NaNoWriMo, I guess that's how you say it.
Yep.
National Write a Novel in a Month. It's not like a contest. I don't know what to call the whole thing, but
it's sort of just like an online challenge, isn't it? In a way, like just a challenge.
Yeah,
yourself,
a challenge. You know? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So I did it longhand because that's kind of been the tradition, And I actually have that manuscript somewhere in my office here. And
Can I have
so I
it?
wrote it. Well, hold on, I'm getting there.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, I in the original manuscript, there was Mundfuentes. There was Santiago. I don't remember his original surname, but they were there, and there was a love story happening. There was, as you said, there was this traveling robot cyborg circus and set in historic Mexico. And I was doing all this research, and at 30,000 words, I was done with the book. And I was like, oh, that's not right. This is supposed to be like around 80,000 words is what you want a draft to be, or at least me. Mm-hmm. So I reread it and I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't right. This is not working. So I took a walk sometime later after moping around for a bit. And I saw these two young women taking photos of each other in front of a red brick wall. And they reminded me of me and my sister. Excuse me. And so as I was watching them, I was thinking, gosh, things would have been so crazy and different if we had grown up or come of age with social media. And all of a sudden, that's what the idea or the transformation of this manuscript took my brain, or took the idea. And all of a sudden, I was rethinking of it as a modern road trip instead of a traveling circuit, and the contemporary scenario of Moon having a sister and Star, who's called Star. And so I know I'm pretty sure I wrote in the acknowledgments that these were two books of my heart and they did not work well together. So actually I have written my robot manuscript, and I'm still working on it. And okay. It is, you know, I love Moon Windows, but this is, and I hope it gets published. I'm still just working on the first draft. You know, yep. I don't want to hype it up too much and then it goes nowhere. Right. But it's my most favorite thing I've ever written. I'm so excited about it. So I hope I can fix it, revise it properly.
Right. You'll find it for sure. And I also hope it gets published as well. It's completely self-serving because I want to read it. And also that's good for you because that's your job and you want money. So, but I understand the story has to feel right to you. Right. So, it sounds like maybe you did find out what you needed to tweak or whatever, but it's funny too, because it's sort of, in a lot of ways, this, you talked about going from a circus or a traveling road show to a road trip movie, but the summer photogram influencers for charity tour is kind of like a traveling road show, isn't it? It's sort of a circus, and we'll talk a bit about why in a second, but it dawned on me that it is sort of a circus, but in a lot of ways. But you were talking too about how it sort of, you took a little bit longer to write Moon Fuentes because you took a year off because you had a child. And was that by design, or was that just, you just didn't feel like you were in a space to be able to write a novel?
Well, actually, I wrote Cia Martinez after that year.
Okay. So, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't like I wasn't planning on that, but that Cia Martinez, my debut, that idea just, it totally, it was like lightning when it came. So, but I was in the middle of my MFA and I had an infant, so I didn't have time to write it until after I graduated. And then I wrote Moon Fuentes shortly thereafter. So it's, but yes, while I was pregnant, I had really, really bad morning sickness to the point where I had to stay in bed. Like if I moved out of bed, I would have to vomit. And so I was just so bummed and so bored. But I didn't have the energy to create anything, anything. So. Yeah. I just watched YouTube videos in bed. And then after I had my son, I mean, just that's having an infant, having a newborn is a whirlwind. And he was a preemie, so even more so. And I didn't write for the year. And then one of my mentors, correct myself. I did write like papers and stuff for school, but I didn't write like from my heart. It didn't feel Right. It wasn't like super creative. So my mentor gave me, and I think it's my book is downstairs. Oh, no, it's right here. She gave me the Woman's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets by Barbara Walker. And it's, I mean, it's self-explanatory. It's kind of like a rewritten version of history, but centering women. And as I read it, I was like, oh my God, like just my worldviews were just sort of imploding and exploding at the same time. And I wrote 100 poems, which became Dirt and Honey, my first, my debut poetry collection. And then I wrote my thesis for grad school. Then I wrote my chapbook, Tales from the House of Baskets. And then I wrote Steve Martinez. So it's like somehow that book she gave me cracked open the reservoir of creative energy.
That's amazing. So it was a catalyst. And that's, I mean, that is priceless, isn't it? Like you could never, like that gift is just, you know, for giving you that book, right? I mean, you must look back at it now and be like, what a gift. I mean,
yeah, it's precious. It's right, right here. I keep
yeah,
it posted.
Yeah, me. Yeah, absolutely. You should like, it should be sealed in a hermetically sealed just so it can never, it can last for all time. Cause yeah, what a gift, eh? Cause it's not like, yeah, it's not just a physical gift. It's the gift of, like you said, of creativity, of it turned into the gift of creativity and passion. And like you said, heart. Talk about sort of, and it seems like you just haven't stopped then since. And you know, do you think this is really hype? This is really kind of, this is extremely hypothetical, but I mean, if you'd never gotten that, if you'd never received that gift, that book, what do you think? Where do you think you'd be? How long, like you would have gotten back to it eventually, I would imagine, but what do you think? It would have taken a lot longer, a year, 2 years, a week?
I think it would have taken a lot longer. Yeah. I mean, the thing was, is I was on a deadline. I had to submit a collection with
that always thesis. Helps.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would have gotten something out. I don't know if it would have been as inspired
right.
or as cohesive.
Well, I'm glad it worked out the way it did because we've got some great stuff from you. There's no doubt about it. One of the running themes through this book, you know, is this idea, and it kind of definitely starts off this way, at least. We talk about the universe starting from something so infinitely small. And this is where I really get excited because I'm a science geek and I'm an atheist, but I spend a ton of time reading fantasy and YA and romance and stuff too. Right. So I think what that does is it allows me to appreciate the universe, not only for its many functions, you know, from a rational standpoint, but also with a sense of awe and wonder, you know what I mean? Like we're all stardust and I see the science behind that, but I also see how like magical and wonderful that is at the same time. So talk about a bit about that with this book, if without spoilers, obviously this relationship that we have with all things, because that's a really strong theme in this story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a strong theme in Mungwintis. It's a strong theme in Z. Martinez and both of my poetry books. And it's because it's a strong theme in my life. Like yeah. I was raised Roman Catholic, like super strict, but we also were raised with what's considered a folk religion. Mm-hmm. So my grandmother and my mother practice these rituals and speak with ghosts and talk with plants. And so I've almost been raised with what feels not quite exactly it, but feels similar to animism, that everything has some level of intelligence. And then that's even now I'm thinking, no, that's not quite it either. It's hard to explain. Mm-hmm. But, and so when I approach the world, like I love to read about the universe. I love to read about science. I love to read about botany and astronomy. I love those in particular. And it just seems to me that I just feel so humble. The more I learn and the more little I feel, and everything is so much more complex and beautiful than I would ever dream of it being or could think of it being. And so that's why it's in my books, because that's sort of my heart in there.
That's a really cool way to look at it. And I look at it very much the same way, and especially this idea that, you know, this, all these great, wonderful, beautiful things are happening that whether, you know, that we play no part in, whether we're here or not. Right. And, it's almost like this thing where we can either be active participants in it and respect it and enjoy it for its beauty and awe and all that stuff, or we can just fucking destroy it like we've been doing. But, it's sort of your point of view, which I, you know, very much are in line with, you know, like we need to respect it and treat it with the care and the wonder that it deserves. One of the things too, let's segue into the actual book, because that's sort of where we're going to get it. We're going in that direction anyways. Do you want me to read the summary, or do you want to sort of like, do you have one you want to practice, like an elevator version?
So How Moon Fuentes Fell in Love with the Universe is a foodie road trip rom-com, romantic comedy, featuring a fat, charming artist protagonist, Moon Fuentes, and her attractive yet grumpy nemesis, Santiago Phillips. Who she has to work alongside. So there's forced proximity. And she also has to kind of work, at least in the beginning of the book, under her sister Star, under Star's shadow.
Forced proximity is a great word, especially since they spend most of their time in living on a bus. Mm-hmm. and I've been on those, because I actually am, many, many years ago, I was a roadie for punk bands. So I've traveled.
Oh, cool. So, I've never been in one before. I had to just look online.
Yeah. So I've spent, I've been all over North America and Europe in tour buses, vans, campers, all sorts of things, but tour buses as well. And, when you've got that many people, and these buses are nice and big and beautiful, but when you've got, you know, 10, 11 people on there, yeah. 12 people, that your space becomes that little tiny bunk that you're in, you close the curtain, that is your world. And it's amazing how much like pleasure you can take in just having the tiniest little space that you call your own. But there's so much of that in this book. And yeah, so basically, there's this thing called Photogram, which is sort of your in-universe Instagram, I guess. And so they're doing what's called the Summer Photogram Influencers for Charity Tour, which is just a funny long name. But Star is like this Christian influencer on Photogram. And she's got, I don't remember the number, but like tons of followers, right?
It was close to a million, right, in the beginning of the book. And then by the end, it's over a million. Right.
And so the owner of Photogram, Andrew Phillips, he organizes this thing and he invites sort of like all of his top, I think, somebody drops out too to allow for Star to go in, right? I think somebody cancels or something. Or, so he invites, she should have been there anyways. She's one of the top influencers. But Andrew invites the top influencers to go on this, again, Summer Photogram Influencers for Charity Tour. And so Moon has to go along because she's, it's basically the mother is, they're all in the business of Star, aren't they? Like it's everything they do is for Star, and cause she's the breadwinner. She makes the money for them and all that stuff. So Moon goes on the road. She's going to do the merch table with the beautiful Santiago, and they all are crammed into this bus and away they go. I really like this cast of people you put together for this. Talk about sort of like coming up with the different influencers, because they're all remarkably different and funny in their own way. And I don't mean funny like they're funny people. I just mean like you really came up with a really cool, diverse mix of influencers. And did you just pick them out of a hat? How did you come up with the different influencers?
Well, I'm trying to remember, because when I first wrote this draft, it was, you know, publishing is kind of a long game. It was like 2 years ago.
Right.
So, or more than 2 years ago, like 2.5 to 3 years ago. So I didn't do a ton of research on influencers. I read a couple articles on influencers, but I must have just tried to consider, I guess, unusual and yet relatable people that we encounter maybe on the internet or in real life. And I'm kind of floundering because I don't think I put a lot of thought behind
No, that's fine. They're all really cool. So like you've got, you know, like Belle, who's a makeup sort of self-taught makeup right. influencer. You've got Oak Steinensen, who's just like this this sort of free climbing hippie, smokes a ton of pot, dude. You know, Chamomile Jones is Star's sort of best friend. Who's a fitness influencer. She's also very religious. And then Van, who does the Van I Am, is just sort of, again, like a health sort of nut, right? Like sort of like a natural fallacy type of person, right? It's a really great list of people they assemble for this tour. And of course, it's being led by Andrew Phillips, who's just this really, he reminds me of like, I don't know, just like this really crazy, like high on cocaine, like... like and not like in a bad, not in a bad way, but he's just always up, right? He's always like, yeah, let's go, let's do this, you know what I mean, like, yeah.
Andrew actually is a little inspired by, okay, so in my in undergrad, I for one summer I was an RA, mm-hmm. and like our boss was, I mean, he said rock and roll every other word. So
Andrew says that.
Yeah, kind of what he's a little inspired by.
Okay, perfect. Him, yeah, so. that's Andrew's tagline. He ends every sentence with rock and roll, pretty much. So you imagine then you have all this group goes out on tour. So it's pretty crazy. It creates a lot of funny situations. And of course, when you're that many people, that many strong personalities together for a long time in a small space, I mean, how could you not have drama, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that almost writes itself. But in this case, though, the drama starts at home, right, for Moon and Star. So it's not a spoiler, I don't think, to say that, you know, because everything centers around Star and they're twins, but Moon isn't like Star, doesn't look like Star, doesn't act like Star, doesn't want the same things that, you know, Star wants. But she's forced, she loves her very much, but, you know, is forced to work together because they're of their, you know, domineering mother. The father is not with them anymore. I won't say why. Religion plays a heavy, heavy role in this book, in mm-hmm. this story. And anytime you have religion playing a role in anything, I mean, Jesus, I mean, I just use Jesus. I'm sorry. That wasn't even on purpose.
I'm not offended. I'm okay.
Okay. I just blasphemized and I didn't even, but it's just kind of funny. But guilt is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, the Catholic guilt.
Is there. Oh, it's heavy. And it's how I was raised Roman Catholic as well. I stopped doing anything when I was in eighth grade, but
I stopped at 18.
Okay, so I stopped well before then. I went to Catholic grade schools. Like I had nuns. Wow. I was taught by nuns. Yeah. Had my hand slapped by rulers. Like, but then it's fine. And then when everyone was supposed to go to a Catholic high school, I said fuck that, and I went to a public high school. And I knew right away I'd made the right decision when you go to a Catholic high school where I was, they give you all the support in the world. They take you there. They give you tours. You meet all the teachers. They set you up everything, lockers, everything. For the public school, I was 100% on my own. I had to get my parents to drive mm-hmm. me to go look at it. Like it was crazy. So I was right away. I was like, yeah, I know I made the right decision. But this house is painted with guilt, isn't it? And it starts with this interesting idea. It's not even an idea. It's a real thing. But you know, that we go back in time sort of in a weird way where this guilt comes from, specifically in the Fuentes household, right? About, I'm going to say it wrong. Is it
La Raiz?
I can't roll my tongue, so I'll let you said it properly. You said it beautifully, so I won't even try and repeat it. Tell us about that, because that's how this book, so we start out with a little bit of history, and it's really cool how it sets the tone for the rest of the book.
Well, again, I can't remember where that came from.
Okay.
It may have just been stream of consciousness, like writing.
Right.
But it
kind of means the curse,
obviously,
right?
It means the root. Her mother does call it the curse as another term. Right. So La Raiz means the root. And basically, this family is what her mother considers cursed to experience very unusual miracles or weird miracles or bad miracles that come when a young woman first has sex. That's when it's like initiated. And it's just, I was raised with just intense, intense purity culture. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously, I was not a conscious, but it comes from that. So there's this curse that her mother calls a curse, even though that's debatable. And her mother connects it to it being this horrible, dirty, filthy thing that happens to young women who are horrible, dirty, bad, and filthy. And I would say in the reality of the book, this is something that is not necessarily explained, certainly not with religion. And it's just, it's kind of inspired a little bit by the miracles I have witnessed growing up with my, like I said, my family who practices rituals and beliefs that are probably pre-Columbian. Right. And we don't have explanations for them. It's just so amazing to me that my mom and my grandmother, who were just so strict with their religion, my mother less so now, but still, I mean, just they made room for this, these practices and beliefs that like other people won't touch because it's considered a heathen, or it's considered evil, or just, you know. And so I have, you know, I was raised with this belief that, you know, Jesus is the only way. But at the same time, my mother, like, for instance, I put this in Cia Martinez with one of the characters, will cut clouds out of the sky with like her kitchen knife, and she'll like stop or influence the weather. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, she did it after our roof was kind of blown off after a hurricane and needed to be repaired, and there was rain coming, so she stopped the rain. So just things like that, I was it influenced me so much that I studied it in undergrad and right. my degree in cultural anthropology. I'm sorry. I feel like I've gotten way off track.
That's perfect. Because, and the thing is, like the root of this, especially for the mother, I mean, she takes it all the way, like she blames Eve for eating the apple, and that's like cursing all women for all time. And so like, that's a lot of years of heavy shit. And the guilt is extreme, and you know, and she thinks she's got it literally bottled in a milk jar. She thinks she's finally kicked the curse, but she's trapped it in this bottle. And then of course, what does Moon do? The worst thing that she could do in her mother's eyes is she has sex. She has premarital sex anyways. So Moon has been in the bad books for a while with her mother. She's not the bright shining quote unquote star that Star is, who represents purity and everything that's great in her mother's eyes. And Moon, you know, represents everything, the evils of the world almost in a way, isn't it? So there's a lot of serious shit going on at home, and it's not pleasant. And I think, you know, you wrote it with a really great sensitivity, and you didn't go overboard with it. It wasn't cringy. It wasn't like torture porn or anything like that. But you really get a sense that like, the unhappiness at home is tangible, and there is some abuse going on, and you handle it really well. For balance, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this, you give us Aunt Tia Esperanza, who to me sounds like she's more of like your mother and grandmother.
Well, okay. So my mom's probably not going to listen to this, but, if she does, sorry, mom. Tia Esperanza is like who, well, my mother's sister died by suicide when I was little.
Okay.
And I've always, since when I was little, imagined that she was sort of like my fairy godmother, particularly when my mom would get all Catholic Latina on me.
Okay.
So like my mother was never violent. She was never like Moon's mother. But these women, despite their like mysticism, they absolutely especially when I was younger, promoted purity culture and the patriarchy. So there was so much conflict. There was a lot of conflict as I came to terms with the lies that I had been told.
Right.
What I consider lies. So
I think I really meant more too as like she's really leans into a lot of the magic that you're talking about more so, right? Like the mother.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the mother never would, but you know, she would for sure. Like Tia, you know, is the one who is encouraging Moon to, you know, embrace more of that, you know, and find herself more in that system more than the system that's caused nothing but damage so far in their lives. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, Aunt Tia is great. She's a wonderful character, especially like, you know, there's a great, great third act in this book where her and Moon really bond in a really important way. And I really love Moon in the third act when she's really finding herself and opened herself right up to all the possibility of just life, really, isn't it? And it's really fantastic. And you sort of introduce this person that to be, you know, a lot of ways her a big influence on her, Anna Mendieta, who I'd never heard of before this book. So I did a bit of research on her and what a fantastic woman she was and a great person to be inspired by. There's no doubt about it. Talk about that for a second. How long had you known about Anna? Has she been in your life for a long time or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I went to Dreyfus School of the Arts in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I majored in visual art.
Okay.
So I trained with visual arts. I consider high school to be training because of how in depth it was. Mm-hmm. For about 10 years, specializing in painting. I studied it out of high school as well. So I put all those years together.
Yeah.
And I was introduced to her in my art history class when I was, you know, junior year. And she was one of the few Latinas we studied. So I just resonated with her work. And she's been one of my favorite artists ever since.
Yeah. I would encourage people to look her up, but she's got a really, really interesting story. And, you know, unfortunately her life ended way too soon and people can read about why, but yeah, really interesting. So thank you for that. Cause I love, you know, being introduced to new things when I read a book, and that was definitely one of them. So thank you for that. One of the great things too, about the third act, and I wrote this on Twitter cause it happened in another book I read this year where a girl goes on a really fucking shitty blind date and the guy brings up how much he loves Woody Allen movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl's just like, see ya, good night, this date's over. Like insta-kill, right? And so thank you for that too. That was really funny. That came up in another book this year where I was just like, yes, thank you. Just one look at this beautiful cover. You must have been stoked, by the way, when you saw this cover. It's amazing.
Yes.
And you are such a visual artist yourself. And now most of the time, though, authors have nothing to do with the cover. Did you have anything to do with the cover or no?
No, I know my lane. I'm not like, even though I'm trained in art, I wasn't trained in illustration.
Okay.
So I'm just like, you do your magic. I trust you.
And they did their magic because it's a beautiful cover and Moon looks fantastic on it. And really great. Colors pop. It looks really, really great on my shelf. So one thing that jumps right out at you though is Moon, obviously. And so talk about sort of like this Latinx Hispanic representation in YA romance, which we don't get a ton of, obviously, like all the other marginalized groups. So here we are with this, you know, big, beautiful Mexican American teen. She gets to like explore all the great things that come with exploring romance and relationships and be this strong, independent person. Talk about just for you, how important that was. And you know, this is not your first time doing it, but, you know, talk about sort of this particular instance and how important that is.
Oh, sure. This is a big one. One romance I've recently read that I would love to plug here is Fat Chance Charlie Vega.
Yep.
By Crystal. Oh, I can't remember her surname now. So I'll just put that out there because there are finally not just finally, but there are more Latinx romances happening in young adult mm-hmm. literature. When I was Moon's age, I felt like I was okay. So I made Moon a size 16. Mm-hmm. I wanted her to be curvy. I wanted her to be plus size, like in definitely plus size, not like a little skinny and a little curvy sometimes, because that can be really frustrating to read. So fully in the plus size sizing. But when I was Moon's age, I was a size 12, and I felt massive, even though when I look back at myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just a skinny, curvy girl. That's it. And I felt ugly. And I mentioned this in the acknowledgments, my sister and I grew up with white passing cousins who, like Moon, fit the ideal, Western ideal of beauty. So thin, light hair, light eye, light skin. And I just thought, you know, writing this romance, if I only had been able to read something like it when I was younger, it would have contributed to me feeling valued, growing up in that environment. So I hope it's powerful and I did it justice. And I know you talked about, I have heard feedback, on her talking about Santiago's beauty, but it was important for me because that's kind of a romance trope. The girl ends up with the hot guy. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I would end up with like the hot guy. I just assumed that no one who was conventionally attractive would ever be interested in me.
Right.
So I guess that was also, I wanted Moon to end up with the hot guy. She's beautiful.
Right.
So I that was also part of establishing the romance formula and putting the Latinx plus size representation in it.
Yeah, and it's done very well. And like I said, it was one of those, it was a weird thing where like by the end I was begging for more Santiago good looking moments. Because I mean, there's very few unlikable people in this book. There's the mother who's very unlikable. I would also add that it's very complicated. But it's, you know, Santiago and Moon and this relationship that's happening between them, you know, it has plenty of ups and downs, and there's a ton of really funny moments between the two of them and sweet moments. And there's lots of saccharine moments, which are great. I'm a huge sap, so I'm all for it. But you're absolutely right. And there's this thing, you know, there's a lot of sex and self-image messaging, whether it's sex positivity or self-image issues going on, you don't shy away from it, and it's great. And Moon has a huge self-image problem. She refers to herself as fat all the time. She prefers being behind the camera instead of in front of it. And that has a lot to do with just the social media and a lot the way we perceive. And not to say we haven't always perceived ourselves in certain ways. We didn't need social media to do that for us, but social media amplifies it in a way. And when your sister is the opposite of that, you're being constantly reminded. It's being constantly shoved in your face. She's literally taking pictures of the opposite of her and the preferred image and preferred look for so many people, or they claim to prefer it anyways. So when she meets somebody who is like, no, I like you the way you are. I mean, that's, I think, when you start to realize that I also am in love with Santiago. And he's got some problems of his own too, right? Santiago, no one's perfect. But it's like whether they're perfect for each other. And that kind of seems to me what's happening here. And you won't want anything more badly than you want these two to get together, I promise you. So, talk a little bit about sort of that whole aspect, what you wanted to get across with this, because I mean, the main thing in the book is Photogram, which is essentially Instagram. I mean, this whole idea, there's industries built off this, isn't there? Like making young people feel bad about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about sort of like what that part of the book and how important it was for you to really hammer home this idea that like size 16, size whatever, like you're beautiful and great the way you are. And we need to really sort of make sure kids understand that, don't we?
Right. I mean, for so long, we've been told, and even pre-Instagram, pre-social media,
right.
That
magazine covers going back however many years, right? Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Narrow idea of beauty. And so that's the thing is, I haven't like done the research, but I imagine most influencers are thin and able-bodied and fit that, you know, narrow beauty ideal. And you're right. Like, I would say perhaps the whole beauty industry is based on making you feel like you lack something that you need in order to be valued as a person. And I think this is in general more true for women. I didn't go in this book thinking, okay, I am going to challenge the beauty myth, but I did go into it remembering how I was treated and how it felt. And also realizing how much of that was lies. Cause I look, like I said, I look back on pictures of myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I spent so much energy worrying about the things I worried about. And imagine if that energy had gone into creative work or, you know, just fun things, like how much energy I wasted worrying about how I look like in a swimsuit rather than enjoying myself at the beach, for instance. So that's, I guess, was where I was coming from, was remembering what I experienced and wanting to challenge that in a narrative.
So this book, we haven't really talked about much. We've left a lot out about this book, and I'm what I said earlier is 100% true. Like, for me anyways, this book just got better and better as each chapter went on. And like I said, by the end, you'll be so happy with so many aspects about this book. And what's nice about it too, is it doesn't, like, you don't solve every problem with this family. There's some stuff left unsaid and there's some things that need to be resolved for sure. But as far as like getting sort of certain people in a good place, you really do a great job of that. And again, it's not a perfect place, but it's a pretty damn good start. And I got to say, I dare somebody to start this book and put it down. I don't think it's going to happen. I think people are going to read this book straight through. I really do. Because once you really do a great job of making us care about Moon, and there's just no way you'll be able to like turn that off. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's no way someone's going to be able to read this book and then stop the third or halfway through and then go run some errands and maybe pick it up again tomorrow. There's no way. That's not going to happen. It's too good.
Thank you.
Do you have anything planned for the launch? Anything, any launch events, any online stuff? What do you got going on?
Yes. And that week, Parnassus, which is a bookstore, independent bookseller in Nashville, mm-hmm. is hosting the Moon Fuentes launch. So I'll be sharing links on social and graphics and things like that.
Right.
And that's going to be fun. And I'm also doing an in-person launch here at my local library. And that's going to be, it's just wonderful to finally.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's, oh God, it's been so long and
yeah.
Oh, it'll be so nice. And that's one thing I've said to so many authors, especially debut authors who have now had to miss out on that. You never get that experience back, right? Your first published novel. And so many have had to miss out on that experience last year. And it's like, it's a little, you know, I have this weird, you know, sort of this thing where I get a huge kick out of seeing other people meet their favorite authors, right? Like it's a weird, gratifying thing for me where I really enjoy seeing people meet their favorite authors and just the emotion involved and the exchange of energy and love. And it's such mm-hmm. It's such a cool thing for me to watch. I really get a kick out of it. And I know it's going to take a little bit more time before we're fully there, but we are, there's signs of it coming back and you're doing one. So that's great to hear too. So I assume everything will be on your website at some point. And like you said, you're going to put some stuff on social media.
Yes, I do have my itinerary in front of me. Okay, so Thursday, August 12th at 6 p.m. Central Time, which I think is 7 Eastern, is my launch, my virtual launch.
Okay.
And I'm probably not going to make the local event too public.
As long as you update the website and people know where to find all information, we'll make sure people...
Oh, I see your dog now. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's weird. That's Carl.
I see your dog. Oh, my God. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's Carl, and that's about the only... He's getting up there in age, but that's really about the only... I caught him in a chill moment, which is rare. So I was like, I better take a picture of this because no one will believe me that he relaxed, that he's able to relax. But yeah, we'll make sure we get people going to your website and your online stuff so they know where to find all that information. Raquel, I can't thank you enough for doing this. Like I said, I'm a no bullshit guy and I meant what I said. By the time I was done, I was absolutely head over heels in love with this book. And I know other people will be too. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Raquel for taking the time to chat with me. I had a great time talking all things Moon Fuentes. Oh, and San Diego, of course. How Moon Fuentes Fell in Love with the Universe is out now, so definitely get your hands on a copy as soon as possible. It's that good. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.